Hello and welcome, or welcome back. Today I am going to be reading chapter 2 of Owl Was Well by Fencer underscore X on Archive of Our Own. I really recommend you go and listen to the first chapter. That way everything makes sense, because, you wouldn't want to start the story in the middle. In any case, please enjoy. Chapter 2. In the wake of graciously helping Potter not break his neck dicking about with his friends, not that Potter deserved the thoughtfulness, it was only Draco's mother had risked her life to save the boy Xavier's skin, and he didn't want her good turn to go to waste. Draco realized that convincing Potter he was willing to deliver his letters and parcels for the low, low fee of a handful of delicious owl treats was, in fact, an absolutely brilliant scam. For one, Draco didn't have to do anything beyond making a show of flying off, after extracting promises of ample compensation for his trouble, wait long enough for Potter to leave, and pass off the delivery to Xerxes, who of course got a cut of the profits. For another, it was the perfect opportunity to snoop on Potter's post. The dunderheaded fool never bothered to steal his letters or enchant them in any way after all, so it was no trouble to skim the contents of anything Potter came begging to have delivered. Most of the time, he was writing to a Teddy Lupin. The surname rang familiar, but Draco couldn't place it. The letters were curious, and it took several deliveries before he divined that this Teddy fellow was either an infant or had been kicked in the head by a hippogriff as a boy. Potter wrote to Teddy Lupin with almost alarming frequency, several times a week, and Potter wondered at their relationship. Potter was the celebrity of the moment, but surely he hadn't sired any illegitimate get just yet. Still, Draco filed the knowledge away for later use. One never knew when one might need to blackmail a prodigious pain in one's feathered ass. In addition to the odd personal missive, Potter also responded to letters concerning a number 12 Grimwald place, which he seemed to have inherited but was now being contested by a trust, evidently because the previous owner had been a convicted felon, and so ownership had been reverted to the trust. He could usually tell when Potter was replying to one of these letters, because he didn't bother making small talk, only offered a curt delivery, if you don't mind, before yanking at Draco's leg like he was a Christmas goose. Going through Potter's post was illuminating indeed, but Draco got the distinct and most unwelcome feeling he was learning entirely too much information about the Boy Wonder's personal life. He didn't feel bad about it. Quite the contrary, he almost enjoyed it. He would find himself hunched over his desk in his room with the latest piece of parchment unfurled before him, mouthing the words to himself and hearing Potter's voice in his head. Ron intercepted a cream puff I accioed at dinner, and God bless the bloke who invented the enchanted razor, and Seamus has decided to learn to play the bagpipes by graduation, and it's worse than baby mandrakes. These insignificant minutiae of Potter's life were being burned into Draco's mind, until he started catching glimpses of Potter in the hallway or across the courtyard and wondering the most insipid things, like, did he knot his tie himself today, or are he and Weasley still practicing on each other? And, did he choose a sensible toothpaste this morning, or is he sticking with Bertie Bott's oral adventure like a madman? And, has he found a suitable toy broom for Tedward yet? It was only difficult to maintain a healthy disdain for Potter was all, when one was being reminded on an almost daily basis that he could be stupid in a sort of silly way, in addition to his usual infuriating way. That he vanished his foods he didn't like from his plate when Granger wasn't looking. That he had ever so many of the same flaws Draco did and was thus just as human and fallible. Just as touchable. It unsettled Draco. Getting so intimate a glimpse into Harry Potter's life, to the point he was becoming less Potter and more miss you loads and see you soon, love, Harry. Enough had changed in these past few years for Draco that it would have been nice to at least have hung on to this one tiny scrap of acrimonious constance, like an irritating comfort blanket. But here he was all the same, and short of tracking down a time-turner and attempting a redo of the past few weeks, there was little he could do but accept that Potter was probably never going to be quite Potter again. On the bright side, Draco at least had no classes with him. Potter was on the Aura track last Draco had heard, because of course he was. And Draco was on the take as few classes as necessary to stay enrolled and try not to piss anyone off track. Between schedules that kept them out of each other's lives, and fields of view, and the fact that house alignments were as strong as ever, the bonds forged in their war weakening once again as everyone returned to their proper corners, Draco didn't really have to interact with Potter at all as a human. But when he doffed his human form and slipped into his owl shape, suddenly everything at once became both less complicated and more. Now, he could easily avoid Potter, of course. There were perfectly respectable roosts well out of Potter's reach, and with one more well-positioned shit, Potter would probably never bother him again. The only trouble was, he didn't want to avoid Potter. Potter didn't treat him like Draco Malfoy. He treated him like a reliable, if ill-tempered, owl who is discreet enough to deliver letters to individuals who might or might not be secret love children. And he smiled, a bright and squinty-eyed thing that had nearly knocked Draco off his perch the first time it had been shot his way. It was a very strange feeling, Harry Potter liking him. Not least of all because Draco was quite sure he'd given him no good reason to do so. But even stranger still was the fact that Draco, well, didn't feel as much like shitting in his hair or using a talon to carve a nice DLM into his forehead these days. That was the trouble with getting close to people you hated. You started to not hate them. And that just fucked everything up. But it wasn't as if Potter would ever find out these things, and you couldn't be a real aristocrat if you didn't have a few dark, dirty secrets rattling about inside your soul that you were bound to take to the grave. Between this and his heartsick passion for buggery, Draco was well and truly set. Potter's trips to the Owlry dropped off in frequency when the Hogwarts Quidditch season started, for though he was not allowed a spot on them itself, not technically being a student any longer, he still packed the stands with the rest of the rowdy lot in House Gryffindor to cheer what he surely had to realize were rather pathetic displays compared to what he himself was capable. When weekends came where there were no inner-house Quidditch games, Potter took to the empty pitch to join his friends in pickup games of their own, straddling the handsome new Nimbus 2020 Draco had graciously customized for him. Bored without fresh posts to snoop through or new owl treat flavors to sample, Draco would perch atop the empty Slytherin stands to take in these more casual games, the owl's eyesight better than even the finest pair of omnioculars. Potter would invariably spot him watching on such occasions. A big white barn owl was difficult to miss, admittedly. But instead of ignoring Draco and focusing on the game, rather on the snitch he was meant to be catching, he would hover there, 100 feet up, waving stupidly at Draco as if they were best mates. The others on the pitch probably thought he was going mad, acting so chummy with a bird. Draco didn't disagree with them. Potter was weird. But weird wasn't the worst quality in the world, nor was Potter being weird any great shock. It was just another one of those foibles Draco was learning about, tearing aside the perfect facades others saw in Potter and exposing him for the ridiculous wanker he was underneath. A wanker who, it turned out, liked to teeter halfway out of windows in tall towers while he did his homework. It was by mere chance Draco noticed it. He'd taken of late to spending a few laps soaring around the castle after dinner to aid his digestion and quiet his thoughts. It was pleasant, really, the brisk night air ruffling his feathers, the sounds of all the inhuman nightlife scattered around the castle grounds, the twinkling dots of candles and lamplights in windows and bracketing doorways upon a sea of black. Things were ever so much simpler as an owl, and he found himself wondering, with a chill of foreboding, if any animagus had ever been tempted to just never turn back, to live out their life cocooned safe within an animal form, unbothered by the consequences of decisions, good and bad, made as a human. Such dark flights of fancy never lingered, but still they did crop up on occasion. On this night, though, his forbidden ponderings were interrupted by the glinting moonlight revealing an open window several stories up one of the towers bordering on the front lawns. Gryffindor Tower, a quick check of his bearings revealed. And there, curled up on the sill to catch the gentle night breeze, one startled movement away from plummeting off the edge and losing that boy who lived title he'd worked so hard to hold on to all these years, sat Harry fucking Potter. He had his knees drawn up, a long measure of parchment braced against them as he scribbled feverishly, and every 30 seconds or so, he would stop and nibble on the frayed end of his quill before evidently hitting upon some genius thought and going back at it. Well, he would soon learn it was stupid and dangerous and stupidly dangerous to sit so perilously close to the edge of a windowsill 100+ feet in the air. And like a harpy out of the blue, Draco streaked down, announcing his impending arrival with a screeching hiss that had Potter's head snapping up in fear. Potter quickly curled into a ball, the parchment and quill sent flying, as Draco zipped through the open window, flaring his tightly tucked wings at the last possible moment, and coming to a tumbling landing atop one of the 4 posters near the far wall. "What the fuck?" Potter shrieked, immediately on his feet and wand brandished. He was breathing hard, and Draco thought he could hear the rough rumbling gallop of his heart. Draco was a bit dazed by the landing and drunkenly struggling back to his feet when, "Petrificus Totalis!" Oh, fuck. Draco's body seized, going stiff as a board, and try as he might to wrestle his muscles back under conscious control, Potter's spell held fast. From the corner of his eye, he could see Potter approaching, squinting to make out his attacker in the dim lamplight. He held himself with a wary caution, wand still trained on Draco, and it was only when he'd gotten within a few feet. Good gad, what were those glasses for if he was still blind as a bat while wearing them? That he released a rushed whisper of, "Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, finite incantatum." Draco's body relaxed and he immediately righted himself, feathers fluffed and body language decidedly pissed off as fuck. What was it with Potter and his tendency to just wildly fling spells at Draco entirely unprompted? The nasty scars spidering across Draco's chest, hidden underneath layers of feather and magic, pulsed sympathetically. Potter chucked his wand away. It clattered against the floor and then rolled, rattling underneath one of the beds. He held up his hands in a penitent gesture. "Shit, I'm sorry, I didn't realize it was you. He cocked his head to the side, brows knitting. It is you, right? The fuck else would it be dive-bombing your window, you numbnut?" was Draco's violently rasped hiss, but Potter didn't seem to understand it, now wringing his hands in frantic worry. Shit, Draco could still feel the magic racking his body, trembling from the strain to his muscles as he'd struggled against the spell. "I'm really sorry, but you scared the mess out of me!" He scrubbed at his hair, and Draco could still hear his heart thundering in his chest. "You can't just pounce on people like that. I don't know how much word gets around in the Owlry, but I've kind of had some bad experiences with people sneaking up on me and trying to kill me." And all right, he had something of a point. But to Draco's knowledge, none of them had been owls when they'd attempted murder, so this had been entirely uncalled for. He began to put himself back to rights, smoothing his feathers back into place and willing his own racing heart to calm. Fuck. Coming here had been a monumental mistake. He'd only thought to spook Potter, perhaps get him to think twice before leaving his window wide open. Not suicide bomb the wizard whose modus operandi was cast first, ask questions later, a fact with which Draco ought to be intimately familiar. Potter was leaned over, hands on his knees, and put himself at eye level with Draco, and behind his glasses, his eyes loomed large and did at least seem contrite. "Are you hurt? If I try and touch you, will you scratch my eyes out?" Draco didn't honestly know what he might do in this state, but when Potter took 2 testing steps forward, close enough to gently poke at Draco's wing to see if it was sound, he endured it with a grudging reluctance. Evidently emboldened by Draco's indulgence, more poking ensued, until Potter had satisfied himself his hastily cast spell hadn't ruined Draco. A good thing for both of them, really, as Draco would not have wanted to limp his way to the hospital wing to explain to Pomfrey why he needed a few broken bones discreetly mended. "Right." Potter gave a relieved sigh and straightened up. "Everything seems to be in order. He turned back towards the window, but kept his eye on Draco, gesturing to the now empty sill. "Did you just pop in for a visit, or did you eat a drunk mouse and lose your way back to the owlry?" Draco tried to show him two fingers, but it didn't really work when feathers entered the picture. Damn, he was useless indoors. There were no roosts to perch upon and glower down imperiously at Potter from. In fact, there wasn't much in here at all, aside from the, he counted, 5 beds, all empty at the moment. Potter must have noticed him surveying the room, for he promptly explained, "The others are down in the common room. Probably won't be back up until curfew. I had a charms essay to finish. It's my week to let Ron crib my parchments, see, so I've got to have it finished by the morning. Oh!" He rushed over to a wardrobe standing beside one of the 4 posters and began rummaging through, eventually pulling out a bulging purse that he shook enticingly. "It's not from Ilops, but the post office in Hogsmeade had a few boxes on hand that customers could purchase. Peace offering?" Draco opened his wings, tail wiggling as he prepared to launch himself and snatch those delicious little nuggets right from Potter's hand when Potter yelped, "Wait, wait!" and quickly hid the bag behind his back. That fucktart. "Let's maybe try something a little bit less risky than flying in a very cramped tower dormitory room, yeah? Let me see." He cast about, tapping his chin in thought, then released a soft, "Ah!" and raced across the room, throwing open another wardrobe and digging through it until he drew out a moth-eaten knitted jumper in a faded red. "It's too small for him anyway, and Miss Weasley knits us new ones each Christmas. He won't mind." He hastily wrapped his forearm with the jumper, then held his arm out and approached Draco expectantly. "Here, you can just pop up here, and I'll carry you where you like. That way you don't risk another crash landing." The feathers around Draco's neck ruffled in offense. He hadn't crashed. He'd made as respectable a landing as could have been expected in the tower's close quarters. And then Potter had assaulted him so he couldn't even get his bearings again. Oh, he was going to take a finger for this. He really was. Potter brought his arm down level with the bed, and Draco waddled across the plush bedding that nearly swallowed him whole until his talons found purchase on the cabled yarn. He dug in, hoping for a wince that said material wasn't quite as thick as Potter had imagined, but no such luck, and he shortly found himself hoisted into the air. Potter held Draco at an angle that had their heads level, which Draco thought was both very brave and very stupid. Gryffindor through and through, this one. And he barely reined in the urge to bite his nose. "Please don't bite my nose," Potter said, evidently now able to read minds. He then held up one of the treats. "Or my fingers." Draco lashed out, snapping up the treat but leaving Potter's fingers intact. The satisfaction would only be momentary, he reminded himself, and Potter would raise a stink about it. The last thing Draco wanted these days was attention. Oh, how far he'd fallen since first year. Potter jerked his hand back, frowning at his fingers. "Are you this bad-mannered by nature, or am I just special?" He sighed when Draco began craning his neck, trying to see where Potter had stashed the purse full of treats, and shuffled his way over to the sill and its still open window. "You really don't belong to anyone, do you?" He lifted Draco up, getting a good look at his feathered asshole. "No band, no crest or anything, and I'm sure you aren't wild." "Who are you?" "None of your fucking business. Now make with the treats." When Potter wasn't quick enough on the draw, Draco began to climb up his arm to Potter's "whoa, whoa, whoa" protests, and he quickly found himself set gently down onto the windowsill, with Potter prodding him to move from the makeshift falconer's glove to the cold stone bricks. Potter tossed the ruined jumper aside, then reached down to collect his discarded parchment and quill, sliding back onto the sill beside Draco. From his pocket, he extracted the purse of treats, placing it close enough that Draco could take nips whenever he so pleased. He so pleased right away, taking 2 at once. "Don't choke," Potter warned. "I don't know how to perform the Heimlich on birds." Draco hadn't a clue what the Heimlich was, nor did he care to have Potter attempt to perform anything on him, so he swallowed carefully. Evidently satisfied Draco was in no more imminent danger, That was twice now he'd nearly died in this tower. Potter was, and ever had been, hazardous to Draco's health. Potter laid the parchment between them and returned to his scribbling. A casual glance between wolfing down treats that tasted like chicken surprise. Was the surprise cannibalism? And Bouffe Bourguignon showed Potter to be badly bullshitting his way through an essay on nonverbal spells. If you haven't got an owner, I suppose that means you haven't got a name, either. Preposterous. Draco had a name, and a very fine one that spoke highly of his pedigree. Perhaps it wasn't going to open quite as many doors going forward, but the name Malfoy still carried some weight, even if that weight was down to infamy rather than fame these days. Should we try some out? It's a bit of a pain not knowing what to call you, honestly. Well, that was hardly Draco's problem, and Potter calling him at all was nothing he wanted any part of. He munched on a treat that tasted like raspberry, liver, and onions, a less than successful flavor, he made a mental note, and wondered how Potter had managed to make it into any newt-level classes at all if this was how he approached his schoolwork. Rank favoritism. That was what it was. How about Snitch, since you seem to like Quidditch? Draco made a retching sound. How pedestrian. And Potter quickly pulled his parchment away, perhaps fearing Draco meant to sick up a pellet on it. Now there was a fine idea. All right, not quite your style, I see. Potter tapped his chin with his quill. Richard, he hit upon brightly, and Draco gave him the worst look. This was somehow an even worse name than Snitch, but Potter only waggled his brows. And you know, for convenience, we could shorten it to Dick. Draco stamped one clawed foot squarely on Potter's shitty essay, and then raked his talons through it, shredding the bottommost few inches where Potter had really started rambling. So, by reciting the spell in one's own mind rather than with one's lips, one can eat and drink while casting, which improves convenience as well as enjoyment, and thus makes the caster happier and therefore less likely to perform any dark magics. Potter squawked in whining protest, scrambling to rescue what had no doubt been whole minutes of half-assed work. Damn it, you little— He pinched his lips into a thin, tight line, forcing his breathing to even, and Draco wondered if he was practicing some of that non-verbal casting himself right about now. He released a labored breath, shaking a finger in Draco's face. Brave, brave man. No, I've got the perfect name for you. Potter leaned forward, and with his excellent vision, Draco could see the beginnings of a spot just above his left nostril. Alabastard, 'cause you're a great white tosser. Despite his pitched fit, Potter managed to restore his parchment with an easily cast mending charm, though he kept it well out of Draco's reach for the remainder of their time together. After gorging himself on owl treats, Draco didn't entirely trust his flight capabilities, and he settled down on the windowsill, lulled into a light doze by the soft scritching of Potter's quill. Something brushed wrong against the stiff, heart-shaped pattern of feathers ringing his face, and he startled awake, instinctively snapping his beak, and Potter jerked his hand back. Oh, sorry, just Hedwig liked that sort of thing. Good gad, this man really had a death wish. Twice he'd courted death and come back swinging. Was he trying for a trifecta? Draco squinted at Potter, who drew his hand back, miming putting it away so as not to bother Draco anymore. You're awfully jumpy. Most owls I've known have been pretty laid back. Well, barring Pig, but he's just excitable by nature. You act like everyone's out to get you. Potter gestured around the room. There aren't many safer places than inside these walls, you know. Even the owlry's protected by the castle's charms. You don't have to be so uptight. He was not uptight. He just didn't like people taking liberties with his person. He took a step back, settling back down on the sill's flagstones. Body language he hoped impressed upon Potter the fact that he didn't want to be petted or poked or stroked or, in general, touched. They had an accord of sorts. No sense in ruining it by getting sappy. I suppose I miss having a pet. Not that I ever really thought of Hedwig as a pet. She was just Hedwig. She could be a little moody sometimes, kind of like you, but mostly only when I deserved it. So not like you at all, really. Draco clicked his beak in warning, and Potter snorted softly. Then the fawn smile on his lips tightened, and his gaze went a bit distant. Animals are great, though. They never judge you. Not the way humans do, at least. They just know if you're in a good sort or a bad sort. That's all they usually care about. He trailed off in thought, staring down at Draco but not really seeing him, it felt. More seeing through him. And now, Draco recalled that Potter had at one point had his own owl, a lovely, snowy owl that had swooped into the Great Hall bearing fantastic gifts he shouldn't have been allowed. What had happened to it that Potter was resorting to using school owls or borrowing friends' birds to deliver his post? Had it died then? He certainly spoke of it as if it were a dearly departed loved one. It's nice as all, having someone just listen, not trying and fix things, not tell you you're being stupid, not lie to you and tell you everything's going to be fine. Just someone to sit there, eating owl treats while I do my homework. And, oh, Potter missed his old owl, who was almost certainly very dead. That was why he was being ridiculously friendly towards Draco when, by all rights, he should have made good on the barbecue threat 10 times over by now. Fuck. Draco did not want to be someone's agony aunt, least of all Harry Potter's. Merlin knew the dark shit he had to complain about. Maybe that was what had done in the last owl, even. Draco wanted peace. He wanted quiet. And he wanted to be forgotten. None of those things was going to come to pass sitting here lazily digesting owl treats on Harry Potter's windowsill. Watching him stumble his way through a charms essay poor Flitwick didn't really deserve to have inflicted upon his person. There was that feeling again, the odd sensation that turned his stomach, realizing he was learning more about Potter than he wanted. The old saying was hogwash. Familiarity did not breed contempt. Quite the opposite, in fact. And the sad sort of hunch to Potter's form and hollow, distant look in his eye did not fill Draco with vindictive glee, but an uneasy anxiety. This close, he could see all the chinks in the Savior's armor, and it was scaring the fuck out of him. He'd always wanted to tear Potter down, to make everyone see he wasn't some teenage god. He was just a spoilt wanker who was too full of himself by half, a waste of a celebrity. But then the Dark Lord had risen and proven there were very real things out there to be frightened of, and having to share the spotlight was not one of them. He'd thought, on some level, a dark and secret one, buried deep, that Potter might be a little bit of a god. The way he fought with every last breath in him, the way he put Draco's pathetic little private rebellions to shame with real-to-the-death battle— The way he stood and spoke and everyone listened, not because he deserved their attention, but because he commanded it. He was everything Draco had ever aspired to be. Hopes and dreams and ambition and desire. A hero. Really. A hero whose face you wanted to stomp into a formless mess because that was how mature, well-bred wizards expressed their feelings. But now, with each passing interaction, that veneer was flaking away. Crumbling to dust, leaving Harry, just Harry behind. It was almost too much to bear. Almost too much. Draco had never been able to ignore Potter before. Why should he be surprised that now was no different? He waddled, still stuffed from overeating, several steps along the windowsill until he bumped up against the still open window. Leaning, he shut it. There. No chance of any clumsy Gryffindors unwittingly tumbling to their overdue deaths, and then shivered to fluff up his feathers, making himself comfortable at Potter's side. "Oh," Potter said with a whining groan. "This feels like a trap." Good. The conditioning was paying off. But he only nipped Potter's trousers lightly. After all, there weren't many safer places than inside these walls. Didn't Potter know? He didn't have to be so uptight. After several tense moments of Potter waiting for Draco to do something nasty, but nothing nasty forthcoming, he finally chanced returning his attention to his charms work, and at length, Draco found himself drifting off once more to the soft scritch-scritch of Potter's quill.
I once blew up my aunt non-verbally, you know?
Draco started, then turned his face, unblinking, up towards Potter. Owls didn't have eyebrows, but Draco's were really doing things on whatever plane his human bits were banished to when he transformed. Not, you know, blew her up. Was an inflating charm, I think. And I didn't mean to, just happened accidentally. But to be fair, she was saying some really nasty things about my mom. Oh, well, that didn't sound half as interesting. Whose magic hadn't gone a little wild when they were younger? Draco had blown up one of the peacocks himself. Like, actually blown it up. None of this inflating charm business. Reducto. Poof. There had been feathers everywhere, and his father had been utterly distraught. Potter sighed, running his eyes over his parchment with a pinched frown, nose wrinkling. I feel like I should have chosen a different topic for my essay. Do you think Flitwick might let me have an extension if I sent a Patronus to ask him? Might impress him, at least. Draco gave a rasping, derisive hiss. Of course the knob was looking for special treatment. Yeah, suppose you're right. This is only meant to be a rough draft, anyway. He tapped his chin with his quill, then pressed the nib back to the parchment, scribbling, "In conclusion, non-verbal spells are actually more useful than wandless ones." Draco nipped his hand and Potter hissed in pain, jolting.
What was that for?
Draco gave him a look, and Potter frowned.
What? You don't agree?
Of course he didn't agree. What an absolutely insipid take. What happened when you were disarmed in the midst of a duel, as certain boy wonders were so fond of doing to their opponents? Draco had gotten quite adept at wandless casting himself, because some fucking wanker had nipped his wand right out of his own hand not too long ago. Nonverbal casting was useful for stealth, but what happened once stealth failed you? What happened when they snapped your wand in half? What happened when it was just you and magic against the world?
I mean, don't get me wrong, wandless casting can be pretty nice, but it's way more difficult than nonverbal casting, and if you can't do something, period, what does it matter how useful it would be if you could do it?
He looked back to his parchment, then scratched through several lines. In conclusion, while wandless casting might be more useful in a pinch, non-verbal casting is easier for the unstudied witch or wizard to master. He glanced down at Draco, waiting for a reprimand. None was coming. It was a fine enough conclusion, and Draco was not here to do Potter's homework for him. It was Draco who heard it first. The distant sounds of footfalls clomping up stone steps and ruckus conversations following students from the common rooms to their respective dormitories. He shivered to rearrange his feathers. After leaning against Potter, a whole swathe of feathers down his side was now pressed flat in what seemed to be the avian version of bedhead. Potter startled, stiffening at Draco's sudden movement.
What? What'd I do?
Draco directed his attention to the currently closed door leading to the dormitory, shifting from one foot to the other and clacking his beak. Potter followed his gaze, then seemed to finally twig what the issue was. Tugging up the sleeve on his robe to check his watch, "Shit, look at the hour. They'll all be piling in here any moment now." He twisted around, unlatching the window again and opening it just wide enough Draco could squeeze through. A breeze found its way inside, crisp and beckoning, and Draco wiggled his tail as a surge of adrenaline pumped through his system. He didn't think he'd ever get tired of the thrill that preceded a leap from such great heights, mind awhirl with the knowledge that all that stood between himself and a broken bag of blood and bones strewn across the ground was his own two wings. Something poked his shoulder, though, and he swiveled his head around, locking eyes with Potter, who gave him a weak wave. "Thanks for keeping me company, and if it's all the same to you, I don't think I'll credit you on my essay. Flitwick would probably want to know who Alabastard was, and my sanity's always been a tenuous thing at this school."
"Indeed it has," Draco laughed with a raspy hiss,
a string of fond memories playing through his mind, and buoyed by these thoughts and his own widespread wings, he took off into the night,
belly full and bound for a soft, warm bed down in the dungeon. Out of curiosity, the next night, on his evening soar about the castle grounds, Draco checked Gryffindor Tower again, and found Potter tempting fate once more sitting on the sill of his dormitory windows with the pane wide open. What a pillock! Draco ignored him. But the next night as well, there was Potter, curled up next to the window as he pored over another lengthy strip of parchment. This time, Draco buzzed the window, buffeting it with one wing to startle Potter, who jerked to attention. A moment later, the window was eased further open as Potter poked his head out. You coming inside, or just doing a flyby to harass me? The others are downstairs again if you want to pop in. Draco did not want to pop in, but there was always the promise of more treats if he deigned to favor Potter with his presence. So another evening of keeping Potter from tumbling out the window to his untimely, or was it overdue, death it would be. It was certainly a more enjoyable way to pass the time than listening to Pansy and Blaze bicker back and forth about who was the more promiscuous, a fierce competition they'd been embroiled in since third year. Potter leaned out the window, like an absolute fool, and held out his arm, wrapped once more in the hideous red-knitted jumper. Come on, so you don't break your neck getting in. Instead, you'll break your neck getting out, Draco huffed to himself, as he made an angled approach, catching himself with a bout of furious flapping to alight as gently as possible on Potter's arm. He was immediately drawn inside, and the chill of the evening was chased away by the tower's cozy warmth. Gryffindor House had its charms, he supposed, as far as amenities went. The dungeon could be draughty if you weren't bundled up under the bedclothes, and even the likes of Blaze, who preferred to sleep in the buff, never went to bed without at least one pair of wool socks on. Potter brought his arm down so that Draco could hop off onto the sill, then tossed aside the protective jumper and grabbed the quill and parchment he'd been working on before Draco's arrival. So, it's a transfiguration essay tonight. What do you know about anime guy? Thenceforth, Draco came by fairly regularly in the evenings after meals and the idle hours before curfew. Some days, Potter roommates were present, and others, Potter wasn't around at all. But on the odd nights when Potter actually used his free time to put forth a bit of effort instead of sailing through his classes, he allowed Draco to join him, taking critiques in relative stride and offering treats freshly procured from the finest shops in Diagon Alley as thanks. Draco told himself this was only a new and exciting way to harass Potter in a form he could never be prosecuted in. What was Potter going to say, after all? A great bloody owl shat on my parchment and nipped off my nose? Not likely. Meddling with the mail was entertaining enough, but pestering Potter in person? In bird? Was always going to have its own allure. It was here he decided to really lean into the owl thing, and see just how much Potter would let him get away with for all the promise of a feathery companion to share a windowsill with him on occasion. The Hogwarts grounds were crawling with all manner of vermin, and though the very idea had disgusted him at the onset, Draco had become, in the months since mastering his transformation, a rather adept hunter, if he did say so himself, and he began to bring fresh kills to Potter's window, just to see what he might do. A mouse here, a vole there, and even, just once, a little white stoat that reminded Draco uneasily of the weasel form he'd been shunted into back in fourth year for the Moody the Misanthrope's delight. But disappointingly, Potter wasn't disgusted by these thankless gifts at all. Quite the contrary. He actually praised Draco for each disturbing delivery, patting him smartly on the head and calling him fantastic. Thinking perhaps that the likes of Harry Potter might have seen far worse in his year than a dead mouse or two, Draco had gone so far as to hack up a pellet once, and this had finally been enough to make Potter recoil in horror. But he'd only used the red jumper to carefully pick up the pellet and chuck it out the window, giving Draco a wincing smile and asking if he felt better now. Treats were always forthcoming now, stored secreted away in a fat little owl-shaped pot that was hidden in Potter's wardrobe outside of visiting hours. Potter had learned that veggie anything would be spat back in his face, and fish-based flavors were pushing it as well. Draco would try most anything, The owl's tastes were worlds away from his own, after all. But he still had his standards, and if Potter, for whatever reason, wanted the pleasure of his continued company, he would know what was and wasn't acceptable to serve a guest. The ratty red jumper had been quickly changed out for a scrap of leather poorly sewn together into something resembling a glove, and sometimes Potter would lay it across his drawn-up knees and invite Draco to perch there. Never one to miss an opportunity to glower down imperiously, Draco often took him up on it, and so passed the evening hours. Potter had even learned, through trial and many, many an error, where Draco would allow himself to be stroked and where would otherwise earn a swift, retaliatory bite or scratch. He was no one's pet, but a gentle brush of the finger along the feathery ridge over his back felt marvelous, and if Potter caught him in a postprandial doze, how could he be expected to react in any manner other than to sit there and melt under the attentions? Preposterous. Several weeks of this had left Draco, on this morning, in a particularly fine mood. It was a Saturday, and Saturdays meant Potter would be spending his afternoon playing pickup Quidditch. In the past, Draco had watched these antics perched atop the Slytherin stands, preening at what a fine broom he'd bought, well, kind of, for Potter. Today, though, he thought he might get in on some of the action. Even as an owl, Draco's seeker skills were not diminished, and he had far more maneuverability now than he'd ever had on a broomstick, if a bit less speed. Between his human instincts and the owl's excellent senses and flying prowess, Draco intended to find the snitch first, capture it before Potter, and then take it off into the wild blue. The game would be ruined, Potter would be in a snit, and Draco's afternoon would be made. He couldn't remember the last time he'd pulled one over on Potter, not like this, and he was practically bouncing on the Slytherin bench in the Great Hall as he wolfed down his breakfast. Potter might withhold treats for a few days out of spite after this stunt, so he would need to ensure he ate proper portions as a human for a while. "Can't these bloody birds aim?" Pansy moaned, lifting her morning copy of the Daily Prophet from the communal porridge bowl where it had been dropped by a delivery owl passing overhead. She waved her wand over the soaking wet paper, vanishing the goopy mess with a pinched scowl. "When they want to," Draco said, distractedly sipping his coffee as he watched Potter from the corner of his eye. Over at the Gryffindor table, he was deeply entrenched in conversation with Finnegan and Weasley, trading excited whispers that no doubt concerned their strategy for the afternoon's game. A pity they wouldn't get to implement it. Potter did have a decent game sense. Perhaps next time. "Well, they'd better start wanting to, then. That's the third time in as many weeks the morning's paper landed in a dish. I'm going to cancel my subscription. Really, I am." "Why do you subscribe to that rubbish anyway, Pans?" came Blaze's drawl from behind the both of them as he plopped down beside her, twisting to straddle the bench, one elbow propped up on the table. "It's dead boring these days." "Well, of course it's boring." She dropped her voice, leaning in close. "And after that shit show last year, I'm glad of it." She shook the paper open with a huff. "We should be so lucky for the most exciting thing on the front page to be an expose on the ludicrously wasteful spending by the knobs in the Department of... Bloody hell." Blaze frowned.
"Department of Bloody Hell? There's a new one."
Pansy whirled around, grabbing Draco by the shoulder and shoving the newspaper in his face. He moved to bat her away, but she refused to relent, hissing, "Draco, look!" with a squeaky yelp. He took her by both wrists, pushing the paper back enough that the bold print of the front page boilerplate finally came into focus, and it was to the sound of rising scandalized whispers rippling through the Great Hall that he read, over a picture of himself, haggard and glaring up dejectedly from the pit of Courtroom 10, "Draco Malfoy, you-know-what-to-you-know-who, revealed as an owl animagus, hoodwinking the public."
Whoa. I very much hope you enjoyed the story. If you did, be sure to subscribe or follow, which I think this is YouTube, so it should be subscribe. And if you'd like to hear more, I've got more content on Anchor and Spotify, like extra stuff, like spicy stuff or stuff
from before this channel was created, and a catalog on AO3, which is still missing stuff, so if you find the holes, be sure to let me know. If you have recommendations, I've got a form for you to fill out, and if you'd like to join my Discord server or follow me on Instagram, you can find the links to all these things in my Beacons page, the link to which will be in the description, as well as some other important information and stuff. This isn't a ploy just to get you to follow me, so I have lots of followers, even though that is pretty fun. I've got polls and stuff that I will occasionally put up to help decide, oh, what am I gonna do this week? What am I gonna do next week? And yeah, I really enjoy all of your comments, and I love talking to you guys, so please leave me some, because they make my day. And while I have you here, please go give the author some love, because they're so good. They're so good. I mean, oh god. Hold on, hold on. Prandial? Are you kidding me? I didn't even know what that was. Such fancy wordplay. I love it. Go like on them on AO3. And thank you for joining me today, and I will see you next week for chapter 3. Bye.